Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. Schools are preparing to reopen, some virtual, some face-to-face, some a hybrid. What is the role of employers to get schools back up and running?
Right now, offer their employees a whole lot of flexibility and understanding. It's that time of year. Students are going back to school, whether elementary, middle school, high school, colleges. And we've seen some colleges already very quickly, Notre Dame, North Carolina, already very quickly pivot only after a week saying, no, we better go to all online instruction. Michigan State's another one of those with the announcement from President Stanley yesterday. They're trying. They've had months to think about this, but the situation is so fluid and changes so rapidly and just how infectious this coronavirus is. Somebody goes out, it's not unusual for teenagers to have parties when they first go to campus. And this is what's happened in some instances. But schools are trying to reopen. They're trying to get students back into instruction. And our cover story this week, written by Andy Blaskovitz here at MIBiz, just talks about some of those issues that schools are going through and trying to plan this out and trying to get some semblance of normality in what is not normal times. If we talk a little bit about what the role of employers. Basically, if you have a group of employers, they've been working at home and they have young children at home, 6, 7, 8 years old, that they have to go to school if that school district's going to in-classroom instruction or if they're just doing online instruction. Who's going to be with those kids? Who's going to help them through that if they're too young to be doing this on their own? That's where the employees need a lot of flexibility and a lot of understanding from their employer right now. We have seen some, and we talked to one, where she's a tutor. She's been busy. She's been signing up parents to offer that tutoring here in Grand Rapids. You know, you can say we should do this, we should do this, we should do this. Everybody learns differently, and everybody needs to adapt to their circumstances. So it's not an easy equation for schools right now. And it certainly hasn't been an easy equation for any employer out there for the last 6 months either. So it's one more of those things that gets thrown into the equation of having to navigate and manage through this. Everybody trying to give each other a little bit of slack and understanding.
Well, as a parent, we had the dry run earlier this year, and we were keeping our fingers crossed that, you know, things would change. They have not. A number of schools are approaching this differently. We're in that hybrid boat, so two parents working. I'm concerned about those single parents out there, how they're going to pull this off. You want to stay home, and you want to be able to work from home, but the reality is you're kind of there teaching too, so your focus gets split. And I'm hopeful that employers, they did receive a taste of this earlier. They now have that understanding moving forward. This is a complex situation.
Yeah, I've been saying this for months. There's no easy solution. There's no one answer. There's no simple answer. This is a complex situation, as you said it, and it takes a lot of thinking things through, and what may be a solution today might not be a workable solution tomorrow. That's how fluid this situation is. As we saw at some of the colleges, students reported, and very quickly we started seeing positive test rates and outbreaks at some of these campuses, so they had to pivot real fast and say, no, we're going to do this instead. There's no plug-and-play model here. Everybody's trying to work their way through it and navigate the situation the best way they can.
No surprise here. This is our entire conversation, Mark. Everything has changed, really, since February, March. That includes we're seeing this expansion, this growth in telehealth.
Yeah, telehealth just exploded in the spring when the hospitals were no longer able to do non-essential procedures and surgeries, when physician practices had to close for non-essential patient visits. All your health systems, all your medical practices urged folks to go to their telehealth, telemedicine platform. If you were feeling symptoms or if you had something else or you needed to check in for your six-month visit if you have high cholesterol and had your blood testing done, you can do these visits virtually for basic primary care or consultations. And the rates were just off the charts. The rates and the use of telehealth just skyrocketed. But that's really put some attention to one of the issues, one of the barriers for telehealth to really take hold even further. And everybody says it's here, it's not going away. Doctors like using it. Even many doctors who were reluctant to use it had to use it. They're now sold on it. Patients who didn't use it before, they had to use it. The satisfaction rates are quite high in some of the reports I've seen. But there's an issue, and that's in the rural markets around Michigan, where telehealth really has great promise to extend access to care, and you have physician shortages and access issues. In these rural markets in Michigan, and this comes from an associate professor of epidemiology at Michigan State University, who had a paper published recently. Her name's Kelly Herko, and it showed 40% of Michigan residents who live in rural areas lack high-speed internet access. That contrasts to just 3% in urban areas. So if you're that person living in that rural market, and a lot of those gaps are in kind of a northern lower peninsula, although they're throughout the state, we have some in the markets around here where folks have limited or very narrow options to broadband. She says some of that's problematic because it limits access to basic care. And, oh, by the way, in some of these rural markets, they tend to have an older population living there, and you have higher incidence rates of chronic illness, such as diabetes, hypertension, obesity rates are higher. So here's an area in these rural markets where telehealth can really help. It holds a lot of promise, but you have this barrier to access in terms of some lack of availability in that broadband connectivity that folks need.
There's a lot of talk of expanding broadband into rural areas, but that will, as you say, that's a process. We'll stick with the pandemic and its impacts. And surprisingly, at least to me, you may tell me otherwise here, but new business applications are on the rise.
Yeah, this was surprising. This came out in last week. The Small Business Association of Michigan publishes an annual report. It's kind of an entrepreneurial scorecard to look at how's our entrepreneurial economy doing in Michigan. And in reporting their 2020 report last week, which was delayed from the spring, the gentleman, Grant Toft, he runs at Growth Economics, Inc., and he compiles this data each year, just dozens, if not hundreds, of metrics he looks at for SBAM. One of the things he looked at this year and pulled up data from the U.S. Census Bureau. And that data shows through the 31st week of 2019 and the 31st week through 2020, two comparable periods, that would be about the 1st of August in each year. For comparable periods, the number of business applications in the state for 2020 increased to 123% over the same period in 2019. That's a lot. So what's going on? Mr. Toft talked about, basically, this was seen as well 12 years ago in that financial crisis in 2008, 2009, put the economy into a deep recession, and you saw a lot of folks who were out of work, they were downsized, they lost their job, their position was eliminated, but they have talent, they have ability, and what did they do? They went out and started their own business. So there's an indicator here, a bit of a data point that says that could be happening again. Out of this situation, this economic downturn and recession resulting from the pandemic, we may very well be seeing many people deciding, well, I'm out of work here. Let's see what I have. And they're testing their mettle to start their own business and try to work for themselves. That brings up the broader issue of economic development policies, both local, statewide, and do you focus that on bringing new businesses in, or do you focus that economic development policy on what do you do for those small businesses that are forming and nurturing them and helping them grow? Or do you, again, that hybrid model where you try to do everything, or do you do something in addition to what you're doing? And that's the issue the folks at the Small Business Association were talking about last week in this presentation as well, is how do you now hone or adapt those economic development policies and practices if indeed this is what we're what's occurring is this kind of, I don't know if it's a new wave of entrepreneurism would be the correct way to say it, but there's definitely something afoot by, according to this data, on new business applications to the state.
MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez, thank you so much.
Thank you.